Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by you guys. Like I said yesterday and heading into this week, Pete and I switched up the days. So yesterday, Pete and I reacted to last night, or by the time you guys are listening to this, a couple nights ago, the Lakers beating the Rockets to even up the series at 1-1. That was a really fun show. And I thought in terms of the matchup, I think it's a fascinating one just because I think from game to game, you're really going to see some pretty clear varying approaches and differing approaches from whether it's players or the coaches, and it makes for a wildly fascinating series. I mean, you always hear in boxing, right? You always hear styles make fights, and in this one, this is about as clashing two styles as you're going to see in the NBA right now, where obviously, I mean, this has been said a bunch, but Houston is not just are they small, but they also play they play slow. So you would think small and they would be flying up and down the court and taking shots as quickly as possible, but they actually try to stand around as much as possible to, you know, so that they can rest on the court and so that Mike D'Antoni can continue to play a short rotation. Whereas the Lakers, as you saw last night, especially in the fourth quarter, when they get out and run, there's just nothing Houston can do to deter them from it. I think right now, LeBron James is now shooting or making his shots at the highest clip in the league right now in the key, and that's a pretty good sign. You know, for I myself had some questions about his athleticism, but if he's finishing at the rim right now, he's at by 75-76% at the rim right now. That means he's elevating pretty well and finishing, you know, albeit against a smaller Houston team. But Robert Covington is actually a pretty good rim protector. PJ Tucker is one of the best positional defenders in team defenders in the NBA. And then they have a whole bunch of wings and athletic players to try to stop you from getting into the key in the first place. And the fact that LeBron is getting there despite all of those things bodes pretty well for the Lakers. Would like to see more free throws, but I don't think that's really going to happen just because of the way basketball is refereed nowadays. You guys had a ton of questions, not just on iTunes, but on Twitter from a few days ago. I think I saw there were 80 total replies to the tweet that Pete and I sent out last week, so I will answer as many of them that I can get to. Let's go ahead and dive in. First question here comes from the iTunes mailbag, which is going to get take precedent here. Lake_show writes, when the opposing team is shooting free throws, I've noticed that most teams have two players lined up on one side and only one lined up on the other side, then sometimes come in from the three-point line to box out the shooter. Why don't teams just line up two people on each side? Then it's easier to box out the shooter, or they could pinch in on both sides of the lane. I think the NBA, I'm pretty sure the NBA has a rule against this, actually. They wanted to limit the amount of clutter in the key, and so they limit it to three players on one side of the key and then two players on the other. So you still get the advantage if you are the defensive team. Basically, if you have inside position, you have the advantage as the defensive team. And then if you have one person back there just in charge of the free throw shooter, at least in generally and theoretically speaking, that gives the defensive team the advantage. And then as Lake_show writes here, some teams will even send in a fourth rebounder to pinch down on the shooter and then have the top side rebounder that's still in the key. They pinch down and help with the bigger rebounder or the more dangerous rebounder on the offensive team. So you can get away in high school and then even in college games with smaller people playing the sport with having, you know, an extra body in there. But I think the NBA said there's just too much clutter, too much going on there. And we just got to crack down on that. So they took out one player compared to other leagues that play basketball there. Next question here comes from Biru Barbs writing, I think this I think this series will be a great test for Kuzma defensively. In what ways does Kuzma match up well and or poorly on guys like Harden and Westbrook? Great job on the guy on the show, guys. Ryan. Thanks, Ryan. So we've already kind of seen it with Kuz. I thought in the first game, it reminded me, frankly, of the first seeding game where Kuzma, his feet were all over the place. He was bouncing a ton and was kind of off balance defensively, and Luka was able to take advantage of it. In game one of this series, we kind of saw that again where he was, you know, people were going by him, and I thought he was a little overly aggressive, just kind of excited, I think, for the series, as you would expect for a player in their first playoff kind of setting. And so I thought in the second game, though, he quieted his feet down a little bit. He was able to kind of keep people in front of him more effectively. The one thing I think he's going to run into, and I think Caruso is going to run into this as well, is like not only will Houston pick up a bunch of fouls just in general because of the way they hunt them, but against guys like Caruso and against guys like Kuzma, younger players who don't really have a reputation right now, referees are just going to kind of sacrifice their fouls. I would anticipate for the vast majority of the series, Kuzma and Caruso are probably going to be in some kind of foul trouble. So unfortunately, I don't really think there's much that can be done there. I don't think the refs are going to kind of rethink the way they're refereeing this game or the series from game to game. So it's on Kuzma and it's on Caruso and it's on the Lakers in general to adapt to the way the game is going to be called and maybe reach a little bit less and be a little bit more disciplined on pump fakes. So those are a few things. But in general, I think Kuzma does okay against Harden if he plays conservatively and intelligently on him. Eric Gordon is a tough matchup for him. I think he's a little too quick and even a little too strong. His center of gravity is so low that when he's dribbling, he can really knock Kuzma off his line. And then from there, you can maybe hide Kuzma on a Danwell House from time to time. You could maybe have him watch Jeff Green from time to time if you have a spot where, you know, LeBron or Danny Green or somebody like that really wants to take Harden in a big moment. So I think there are some guys that Kuzma can kind of be able to manage the game against a little bit better. But in general, this is going to be kind of a tough series for him just because they're all kind of smaller and quicker than the kind of players that he was used to guarding throughout the season to this point. Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, I'm going to come back and answer your guys' questions. Today's show is brought to you by Rock Auto. RockAuto.com has been an incredible resource. For some reason, we got out here to Texas, and both of Jen and my cars just decided, yeah, we're just going to stop working for a little bit. And you know, there were some situations where I just needed help, and we needed to take it in. But there were some other smaller issues that kind of popped up, and I was able to hop on RockAuto.com, pick up the parts that I needed, and attempt to fix the cars. In some cases, I was more successful than others. But overall, like it's a cool feeling when you feel like you've worked with your hands, especially for me. You know, I one of the softer jobs one can possibly have. And so diving under the hood and trying my hand at some of these things, so long as I'm not biting off more than I can chew, is a lot of fun, actually. It's become kind of a fun little hobby. And Rock Auto has made that all the easier. They have every part that you could ever possibly need, regardless of what kind of vehicle you're driving or fixing. They have prices that are going to remain reliably low, no matter what background you have in trying to fix your car. And then it's a very easy to use website. You just hop on there, and no matter what part that you're looking for, you're going to be able to find it in the next couple minutes, so long as your internet is cooperating. So head on over to rockauto.com, write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box, so you can tell them how you found out about them, and then, you know, take care of your car. Rockauto.com has amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need. One more time, that is rockauto.com. All right, the next question here comes from Dom's Drew. Been a ton of talks surrounding the trio of JaVale, Dwight, and Rondo been somewhat unplayable in this series. Is there a way to hide Rondo defensively against the Rockets in limited minutes because he's one of the only guards on the roster that can throw lobs? We saw it in yesterday's game, or by the time you guys are listening to this, the game Sunday night. If you have Rondo out there and he's guarding Westbrook, he can kind of be hidden a little bit. And I think Rondo understands, what you'll see from Rondo is he'll go up and he'll annoy Westbrook, 90-something feet from the basket and just kind of play contained basketball from there. And then as he gets closer, he'll back off and force Westbrook to be a shooter or, maybe funnel him towards a trap or something like that, which I hope the Lakers don't spend very much time trapping Westbrook. But and then when Rondo is guarding Westbrook off the ball, he can roam a little bit. He can kind of play rover. He can get in some passing lanes. The Lakers just are not paying any attention to Rondo or to Westbrook whatsoever. And as a result, because Westbrook in Sunday night's game was okay with taking three-pointers, that strategy really paid off. One thing to really pay attention, though, if Westbrook pays attention to the tape and looks for ways to mitigate against the strategy that the Lakers are using on him. Throughout the season, it was a big topic of conversation. Wow, look at how few three-pointers Russell Westbrook is taking. Wow, look at this. He's shooting so much from the mid-range. And what that has a lot to do with was the ball would rotate over from a trap or something like that. He would catch the ball in a ton of space. And instead of shooting, he would either drive hard to the basket and try to get all the way to the rim, or at least just kind of poke and prod around the defense and either find somebody to pass to or rise up and take a mid-range jumper that he's more capable with than he is from the three-point line. So in Sunday night's game, it worked really well because Westbrook kind of played into the Lakers' hands. I would anticipate, though, over the course of maybe the next couple games, I'm hoping I'm wrong, but I would imagine he's going to go and look at the tape and see how passive he was. And it was weird to see a passive Russell Westbrook. I've never seen it. And I think he's going to look at that and say, okay, I have to attack in some of these spots and be more of a factor there. Let's go Prince. This is from Kevin. So I'm curious how the Lakers plan to potentially implement their high-low game versus Houston. Adams was terrible for OKC in that regard, and the Lakers have some dynamic centers. Well, first and foremost, we're going to have to keep an eye on how healthy JaVale McGee is. If he isn't ready to go, then that means Dwight has to be that much more ready. One thing that the Rockets will sometimes go into like this amoebic 1-2-2 zone, and what I preferred to run against that was I would run two guard sets. I would have two guards basically a little higher up above the initial defender in that zone, and then I would have somebody at the free throw line, or I would make it so that I would rotate cuts towards that free throw line, and that's how I would pick apart the zone. I would rotate the ball back and forth a couple times, make the zone move as the zone is moving, see if I can get the ball into the middle of it, and then from there either the person catching it there, probably AD, will be able to turn and either take that free throw jumper, maybe take a dribble towards the rim and try to collapse it further and throw a lob over the top to Dwight. Or as everybody collapses, maybe he finds a corner shooter or something like that. And that's how I prefer to go against a 1-2-2 zone, or any kind of a zone where, a 1-3-1, any kind of a zone that has a single defender up top. I try to offset that with two players on each side of that initial defender, and then force that defender, and then by extension the entire defense, to move a little bit, and then eventually get the ball into the middle of the key. The one thing with zone defenses in the NBA, though, is that you only have 24 seconds, and then by the time the ball clears half court, if you apply any kind of pressure in the backcourt, you're getting into your set at like 15 or 16 seconds, And at that point, you don't have very much time to rotate the ball back and forth. So that's why sometimes you see zones being, you know, a little bit more successful than you would think, given how well NBA players can shoot the ball. But, you know, it again kind of falls into these math issues where if you get behind schedule in your set against a zone, you're probably going to wind up having to force some shot that you aren't necessarily comfortable taking. And then from there, the defense has done its job. Let's take one more second here. And when we come back, I will finish off with as many of your questions as I can possibly answer. All right, today's show is brought to you also in part by DoorDash. We are thrilled to work with DoorDash. I personally am thrilled to work with DoorDash just because they have been so helpful here. And I only really speak up or talk up companies that I personally use and I personally would tell my friends to use. That's basically how I go through choosing our sponsors and our partnerships. And everybody who doesn't use DoorDash, I tell them, you got to try this out. They have so like 300,000 partners in the U.S., Canada, Puerto Rico, and Australia. And you can, you know, those are national chains. You have local chains. You have, you know, fast food restaurants, whatever it is that you might be craving in that moment. DoorDash is going to have you covered. And they're going to get it to you quickly and safely. And your food is going to be fresh. And those are the three keys here with DoorDash. And every single time I have worked with them, I've walked away asking myself, why did I ever use anything else? They have delivery that is now contactless, if you so choose, where they just leave your food at your front door. That's how I personally have asked for all of my food to be dropped off. And it makes me feel better about ordering food and supporting these restaurants that have gone through such a difficult time. And right now, listeners can get a $5 off and zero delivery fees on the first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code LOCKEDONNBA. That's $5 off your order and zero deliveries when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code LOCKEDONNBA. One more time, that's LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. All right, so the next question here coming from, this is from at Team Ingram, THT minutes coming. Lakers need to defend shooters and to be fast in transition defense. He should be on the active list in this series. And then forever, I guess, is I think how they meant to write that. I just don't trust rookies, especially undrafted rookies. It's one thing when, like, Zion is being asked to carry a large load in playoff type settings, or, you know, even we've seen some players come in and take care of business there, but generally they're first round picks, or if they're second round picks, that's a huge anomaly. But I think for somebody like THT, he got some experience in the bubble. He is going to, you know, be next to all the teammates and understand the intensity that comes with playing in the playoffs. He's going to understand preparedness for those situations. And then next year, probably, or the year after, he'll be ready to impact these games in any way, shape, or form. Right now, I just don't think he's quite ready for it. Next question here comes from Bright Uduji at Enter Energy writes, what's the minimum numbers? Oh, we already answered this question. So this next one comes from Simon Ribello. From which game onwards do you see AD starting at the five? I'd say game two. So we have passed game two and he did not start at the five. The thing to keep an eye on here is JaVale's health. It appears that Dwight is in Vogel's doghouse. He didn't play at all in that last game, and he still didn't play even when JaVale got hurt, which should speak volumes. And if you're looking for, you know, kind of hints as to what the rotation might look like moving forward, Dwight might start next game, but if he starts, it'll probably be with a quick hook, and the Lakers will probably go primarily with Anthony Davis at the five. You got that report right after game one that said, you know, Anthony Davis isn't thrilled about it, but he's willing to play the five in this series. Thank you, Anthony, for doing the thing that makes your team better and better equipped to win the series. But yeah, I think if Dwight doesn't have it and JaVale is hurt, then that's going to force the Lakers' hand in terms of starting Anthony Davis. And then I still think ideally you get some minutes with Dwight in there just to punish and to have, like, think of it like a running back, right? You'll kind of ask yourself over the course of a football game, why are they just running out up the middle? What are they doing here? And what it basically is just like tires out the at least the and especially the center of the line. And if you can break one open and get into the secondary, then even better, right? That makes that means you're doling out some punishment to the safeties and the cornerbacks back there. But over the course of the game, the more that you do that and the more that you do so successfully, you at least theoretically have some, you know, you might win the time of possession battle, and then you might be able to get those interior linemen nice and tired so that when you need to make those runs, those, you know, 2 or 3 yard per carry averages become 6 or 7 or 5 or 6, and you're gaining legitimate chunks there to be able to further take care of the time of possession battle. In this case with Dwight, it's kind of the same concept where you put him out there, maybe he slaps the ball back to the backcourt a couple times and you get a couple loose balls and you generate a couple extra possessions. At the very least though, maybe he sticks an elbow in PJ Tucker's back and just kind of makes him a little bit less comfortable moving forward. He doles out some punishment to Robert Covington and makes his legs a little more tired so that when those guys are guarding Anthony Davis later, they can't move their feet quite as well. And either they pick up a foul or AD just goes by them outright. That's kind of where I think Dwight and even JaVale have some value in this series. Let's go a couple more here. Let's go from Chato Mate or Matt. Did Dame and CJ train our guards to defend perimeter guards better? Are our bigs fast enough to keep on the floor in this series? We've talked about the bigs. It's not like their speed is actually kind of an advantage when they get out and run. So when you're asking about fast enough, they're fast enough to hopefully take advantage of the Rockets in this series. It's about quickness. It's a lateral quickness that, like Dwight especially, I'm a little nervous about. And especially against a team that you want to try to keep off the line. It's a tough series for Dwight, just flat out. And now with Dame and CJ, yes and no. I don't think Dame really prepares you for Harden because of how much bigger Harden is. And because of how he tries to get fouled in ways that Dame doesn't necessarily do so much. CJ's a little bit better of a, you know, you can translate guarding CJ to guarding Harden a little bit better. Similar size, maybe a little smaller, CJ might be. But similar kind of tricks in the bag. CJ operates a lot more from the mid-range than Harden does. So that's a bit of an adjustment when you're going from CJ to Harden. But the biggest thing is, like, you, over the course of a 7-game series, you get your reps in against Harden, and hopefully you figure him out before he figures you out. And that's basically the name of the game when you're guarding against somebody like that. Let's go one more question here. Let's go from Miles Politich. Doris Burke, late in the Houston OKC game, talked about a conversation she had with Vogel about fouling when up 3 points and seconds to play. Vogel talked about it. If you do try to foul on a downward dribble to prevent a shooting foul, what are your guys' thoughts on fouling up three or not? I mean, it's all situational, but generally speaking, especially against a three-point shooting team as good as the Rockets are, you want to be able to take a foul and give them less time or get into the free throw game. And hopefully you can take advantage of them on the other end of the court. But for the other concern here when you're fouling up three is how confident are you in your free throw shooters, right? We've all seen LeBron shoot free throws late in the game. It's a bit of an adventure. Anthony Davis is a pretty good three-point shooter. KCP is a pretty good free throw shooter. But if like Alex Caruso and Rajon Rondo are on the court, those guys are pretty easy foul targets. I would say ideally you foul and then trust guys like LeBron and AD and KCP to be able to knock down a couple free throws and win the game that way. The other thing too is Houston and most NBA players at this point have kind of understood when they're probably going to be fouled, and they'll try to trick the referee into calling that a three-shot foul anyway, which, as we've seen, just ask Miami, referees are all too happy to call. So I would say do so, but make sure you're doing so at least 35 feet away from the basket, and make sure you're doing so against a player who might not anticipate the foul and try to get a shot up anyway. And then when you do that, you got to go down to the other end and make your free throws or finish on the offensive side of the ball. All right. That is going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you guys a ton for all of the questions. This was a lot of fun. Make sure you guys continue to get those in the form of 5-star reviews on iTunes so that we can continue taking advantage of that approach to reviewing the show. And then, you know, if you can't leave questions on iTunes, you can send them to me or the show on Twitter at Locked On Lakers. That, like I said, is going to do it. Pete and I will be back to talk about the game tomorrow night after it happens, right after it happens. Until then, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.